If you've ever wanted to create a business that's sustainable beyond your life or something that's just so much bigger than you, well, this is the episode that you want to listen to. I'm talking with Kim Butler, and she's probably one of the most well-known authors, speakers, and thought leaders inside of the alternative investment and financial space. Kim has written tons of books. She's got a podcast, and she's the leader of this movement called the Prosperity Economics Movement. And what she does with this movement is she's creating a revolution in the financial marketplace. I mean, it's a complete disruption. You're going to hear what motivates Kim. You're going to hear why she's created this nonprofit. You're going to hear how she runs her business, and it's a large, big scale business. And you're going to hear where she puts the majority of her focus and time, and also some tips that you can apply to grow your business. So let's dive into this interview. Let's start out with this. Take us back to the beginning when you had your solo business, and Kim's in the financial industry, and she'll actually go into more detail that it's more than just a financial industry. But I want to learn where it is, those roots that you started, and then why you took on something larger than life, this prosperity economics. So take us back to those days.
You know, it's interesting. I think every solopreneur, so, you know, you start out, you're basically yourself, you might have an assistant or so, is so focused on just getting the business up and running and doing their work that they often can't raise their eyes a little bit more to include others. And yet, as soon as they do that, I think their own business just takes on a whole another level of the game. And that's essentially what happened to me. Is I had a very, very nice practice and just was basically on autopilot, loving my work, doing good things for clients all across the country. We happen to have a financial services firm that does all of its work over the phone and the web. And I had developed a unique message that was very different than a lot of the other financial firms out there. First, because it sort of went against the grain of the typical Wall Street model where it was stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And then second, because we had really, at the suggestion of a marketing coach, developed these principles of prosperity. So we have these seven principles of prosperity, and they were valuable for me, and they were valuable for our clients. And all of a sudden, I started hearing that advisors were picking them up and using them. And these are technically people that you could say were my competitors, and yet they really weren't. You know, they were in other parts of the country. They weren't really directly competing with my clients per se. I guess you could have said maybe I was a competitor of them, but none of us really looked at it that way. And over time, I just really had a deeply felt desire to help more people. And I only have so much time in my day, as all of us do. I couldn't really take on more clients at a faster pace. I mean, as every day progressed, I could take on more clients, but I couldn't really take more on than that. And it just dawned on me at some point, you know, as I really thought about this goal to help more people, I felt like I really needed to put my money where my mouth was and put my time and my efforts where my mouth was. And that if I really wanted to help more people, one of the ways to do that would be to help more advisors who then could go help more people. And once this idea took hold, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And it was actually kind of frustrating because here I am trying to run my practice, help our clients, and I have a small team, and we're growing and we're doing some neat things. And I have, again, more and more advisors reaching out to me and saying, what are you doing? Well, how are you doing that? And I'm helping them and helping them and helping them, and really not getting anything per se, like paid or whatnot for it. And yeah, I could have created a coaching program, but that didn't really resonate with me. I really wanted to do something that was truly sustainable beyond my lifetime. And we all hear about this saying of being a part of something bigger than yourself. And so it just dawned on me, and I really want to give my husband, Todd Langford of Truth Concepts, and the software that he provides credit for this as well, because he and I started to talk about it. Like, how could we help more advisors? Because if we help more advisors, then they help more clients, then that spreads our message further. And so we came up with this idea to create the Prosperity Economics Movement. And we'd already coined the term Prosperity Economics because we needed to have a way to explain to clients simply what we did that was different than the typical Wall Street model of, quote, financial planning. And so we just added the word movement to it. And we decided to create a legal, legitimate 501c3 organization, a full-fledged, approved nonprofit, which took probably 2 years to get approved, so that the movement was really, truly, legally, technically, financially, something bigger than just us. And that made it very, very clear to the advisors that were joining it that we were doing it for them and that it wasn't something for us. And I've got to tell you, that, as hard as it has been, and I'm sure we'll get to that here in a little bit, that has been one of the most energizing, awesome things I have ever done. And I love having a direct tie to something that's bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think one thing is I'm a listener to the show, and then I'm the one asking questions. When we listen to the language, there's not a lot of me, and there's not a lot of I. You're really talking about the people that you were looking to serve, the group of people around you, and we. And so what was it that caused you to want to create this collaboration versus hiring employees and building out a huge organization for additional profit?
That's interesting that you use the collaboration word, because when you fast forward to today, Dan Sullivan of Strategic Coach is building his entire third group of entrepreneurs under a collaboration model. And I think I started down that path because I really view people coming together and bringing different skill sets, in other words, the definition of collaboration, as the most valuable and effective way to get results. Because you're going to have the person that's great about logistics for an event, the person that's great about speaking at an event, the person that's great about writing for the movement. You're going to have all these different skill sets. And if you can collaborate on something, then the people that are benefiting from that are going to get better than 1 + 1 = 2. They're going to get even better than 1 + 1 = 3, because that's kind of the normal saying, right? We say, oh, you know, if you get some real effectiveness here, some great collaboration, it's like 1 + 1 = 3. Well, I think a really high level of effectiveness around collaboration and bringing people in with different skill sets all towards a common goal is actually like 1 + 1 = 11. And of course, 11, you know, when you put the one and the one side by side, that's what it equals. But that to me is a symbol of the utter multiplying effect, literal multiplying effect that can happen when you bring in resources, when your motives and your values are clear, when the results are tied to the benefit of everybody, then you get that 1 + 1 = 11. That absolute, more than just adding up of a one and a one, that multiplier impact and the exponential capability that it has.
So why is it that that motivates you versus money? Because if you went down the franchise route or down the, you know, the expansion of your team, that could have potentially brought in a lot more profit. So is there something more inherent, something deeper that just motivates you other than money?
Well, believe me, I am plenty motivated. I have been since I was a fourth grader, and my dad actually gave me a dairy cow, like a milk cow, to sell the milk. And so since that age, I have kept track of money. I have been money motivated. I'm very conscious of what money can do. So it's not that that went away. I think where the difference lies is I saw that in order for the movement to really grow, it had to be more than about me. It had to be more than about me and my husband. It had to be more about the two separate companies that we're bringing together and have this third arm, if you will, that was about them. And so our very, very first step in the effort of getting this movement out there, in addition to creating the nonprofit, was to have an event that the nonprofit could sponsor. And I wanted people to be really clear that whatever they were paying for the event was going to the nonprofit, and that whatever profit was from the event, which by the way, there was none the first 2 or 3 years, was going back to make that event better. And so in direct answer to your question, I believe that the reason that I chose to go that route was that I felt we could get better results, and I felt like the members that were participating in the event and in the movement could directly see those results, and that all of the offering was very transparent, and that nobody had to be confused or wondering what the motive was. Like, I wanted to wear my heart on my sleeve, if you will. I wanted my motive on my sleeve so that there was no question as to why we were doing what we were doing. And I felt like we could get better results by creating that structure, that collaborative, give first, nonprofit oriented structure. I felt we could get better results going that way than going the monetary route. And so did that hurt our pocketbook? Yeah, absolutely. But I believe long term that it will be well worth it.
Up next, Kim's going to share with us what it was like putting together this event for her nonprofit and why she almost threw in the towel and quit.
So, we put the event on the web. We start emailing to the various advisors that have reached out to us over the years that we're going to have this event. We have expectations of, I don't remember, 50 or so people that we think we can get to that first one. And we struggled and struggled and struggled, tried to get our marketing message right. We were creating a brand new movement, brand new language, brand new event. This was not an easy job for our marketing team and for us. And we got about 30 people at the first event. We had a great event, but it was not a pretty picture financially. And yet, just as we were finishing it up, I mean, I was really clear that our job was not done. Like, we had to put this on a second year. You can't try something like that and only do it 1 year. We finally built some momentum. We absolutely had to keep going. And so it's kind of interesting that the transition from the first year to the second year wasn't as hard as something that I'll tell about in a moment. But to finish answering your question, the event is designed for whole life insurance advisors. And so for the business owner that might not be familiar with this, they're kind of the redheaded stepchildren of the financial services world.
That's true.
If you actually admit to somebody that you sell whole life, then you're going to get, either somebody's going to run away or they're going to look at you kind of cross-eyed or what have you. So as your listeners, may or may not have knowledge about this, whole life is a product that's been around for a long, long, long time, and it works really, really effectively as a place to store liquidity, which is super important for businesses and all families to have. I like to call it your emergency opportunity fund because, we all save money for emergencies, but we should save money for opportunities too. And whole life insurance, the cash value of that product is just a really good place to store it. But the advisors or the agents that sell this product, like I said, are kind of the redheaded stepchildren. And so, frankly, there is not an event for them where they can go and be so focused on this unique product that they are treated as the king. And instead, most of the time, they're treated as the redheaded stepchild. And if they go to other insurance events, much less other financial services events, they're frankly going to get looked down on. So we really felt like this was an important message. And so, like I said, we've got some momentum and we head on into the second year and basically just get a slight improvement. I think we had 40 people there or something. And this is costing me and my husband, directly out of our pocket, we were funding the nonprofit to put on this event. And the event was not making money. It was costing us money and a ton of time. And I remember my sister was helping with the event as well. And so at the end of the second one, I'm sitting there with my husband and my sister. Sorry, it wasn't the end. It was the day before the last day. And I said, I'm not doing this again. This is too dang hard. It takes too much of my time. We're not getting the results that I want. We are not helping people as thoroughly as I want. We're not getting our message out there as much as I want. I'm done. Like, don't let me get talked into doing this again tomorrow. So at the end of the event, we have this wrap-up meeting. And basically, as we go around, like, what was the best part? Like, what are you looking for out of the movement? Every single attendee was talking about how important the event was to them, how valuable it was to them, how hopeful they were that we were going to keep going with it. And I'm close to tears thinking, oh my gosh, no, I don't want to do this again. It's too hard. And yet it was so clear at the end of that little wrap-up session that we really had struck a chord. We really had provided something of value and that we needed to keep doing it. And so we did.
Now, was that second event the one that happened last summer?
No. So last summer was the fourth event. So to skip forward, the third one got a little better. You know, I think now maybe we have 50 people there. We changed the venue. We felt like we had a little bit better structure. We added some additional marketing capability. I still felt at the end, at like two-thirds of the way through the third event, like, oh my gosh, please don't, please, no more. And the same kind of thing happened. Yes, more. Okay, fine. And then at that point, we added another leader to the community. And that really gave some new life to it. And it really helped me see like, okay, yes, what we've got going here is of value. It is striking a chord. And literally creating a movement is, it's like a revolution. I mean, the steps that you have to go through, the creation of a cheer, of colors, of values, of principles to abide by, you know, all those things that are necessary, literally, when you think about like a peaceful revolution. That's what we were working with. And this other leader, Patrick Donahoe, who you know, that he came in between the third and the fourth year and really took a hard look at what we were doing and said, you know, you've really got something here and I'd like to help. And so that bred a lot of new ideas and synergies that could occur and more collaboration and gave Todd and I some just faith that, oh my gosh, okay, yes, we're on the right track here. And so last year was the fourth year when we had in a third leader that was super, super valuable.
See, for our audience, I was there last summer at that event. And that's why I was, you know, almost a little taken back because it seemed like this was a group of people that had been together for a long time. Now, I imagine as I've put together events in the past and Kim's in the thick of it, it's not easy. So what are the current challenges that you're facing now and how are you going to plan to overcome them?
That's a great question. So we're now deep in the preparations for our fifth event. It'll be in a couple months. And the constant challenge is very similar to what it has been all along. Getting our message out there. We do now have a brand established and some language and our principles are set and our values and that kind of thing. And so that's really, really helpful. And it, of course, it's always easier when you have that to figure out what to say no to. And I believe that you're defined more by what you say no to than what you say yes to. So as an example, this year we had a very large insurance company offer to spend a whole bunch of money at our event. And we said no to that. I mean, I said no to that very quickly. I didn't even have to go back to the team and ask them because our principles are that this event maintain its independence. And even though we're talking about life insurance and whole life, and they would have been a very welcome presence, and they'll still come, but they'll come as an attendee, not as a sponsor in any form. So that's been a big learning lesson. Additionally, we're changing the format of the event this year, and I'm really looking forward to it. We've always done kind of TED Talk style presentations, and we're going to take one whole day and do brain dating. So I got this idea from an advisor that had attended another event where they did some brain dating, and it's like speed dating, but at the business level. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I think that will mix the event up again. I mean, we're constantly asking our participants, what do you want? How can we do better? We're constantly learning. You know, I've never run events before, so I'm learning in that realm. We're learning what to do with some of the marketing messages and how to involve social media. We really want people physically attending the event. So there's the big debate about live streaming and how we can effectively use that without pulling away from the benefit that you get from physically attending. So there's just continual lessons that are going on, and yet we still have this overriding method and message that we are putting out there that we feel resonates. And I still get brand new emails from advisors once or twice a week. I love your stuff. I love what you're doing. I love everything that you guys are saying. What you're saying has been what I've been thinking forever. You've really put words in my mouth. You know, those types of comments, which are very, very gratifying and help us keep going at times when we send an email out and only get, you know, a small percentage of responses or opens or what have you.
That's really interesting. So you've been able to create this community, these people that are raising their hand and want to be a part of it. You mentioned something that I want to pull out, just knowing the context of your business, of having the event and wanting people to physically be there. However, you run your business independently. So you run from the middle of nowhere, Texas, and your team is virtual. So how have you found that balance between this virtual business you run and then putting these events together? And do you find it to be collaborative and helpful for your team members to come to the events as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think we all know that when you attend something in a group that's live, but over the internet, you get a very different sense of everything, the content, the people, than when you attend something physically with our meat bodies, as Peter Diamandis likes to say. And so when I'm helping clients one-on-one, interestingly enough, I think I can get better results when I'm over the phone and the web, when I'm with a client one-on-one. But when I'm with an advisor one-on-one, I think the advisors can get better results when they come physically, geographically together. Because then they're not only getting whatever is being shared from me or the front of the stage, if you will, from the other speakers, et cetera, but they're getting the good collaboration amongst each other. And that's super, super important. We hear it all the time that people resist the idea, the travel, you know, having to come and physically be there. But then once they're there, they realize how much more they get out of the event. And then you asked about our team. And yes, we do have a virtual team that's literally all over the country. And the team is primarily there. I guess about half of them are there just for the clients. The other half are there both for the advisors and the clients. And yet they do get a lot out of it, because since our team is virtual, we have the same issues. You know, we do a team meeting, but it's over the phone. And so when we do have the chance to get together as a part of the event, it is a benefit for everybody. And so as a community, I think when we have a chance to press the flesh, if you will, it's something that we should take advantage of, that we should make the effort to make the travel, to have the event happen. And I think one of the biggest benefits is because you are forced to focus. Whereas when you attend something live, and we do plenty of events that are over the phone, over the phone or over the web, when you attend something live that way, in other words, live online versus live physically, geographically attending, you just don't have the focus. You don't have the dedicated mental space that is required of you when you're physically there. And so there's a real value to both, to go ahead and get some stuff done over the phone and the web and via email and live stream and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, have it be available to you, a situation where you can physically attend.
Wow. So you've really turned it into something larger than life. And I can see the collaboration piece, how that'd be essential, and the focus. Where I want to switch gears now is I'm thinking of other business owners that I've interviewed or people that I know, and people that are thinking larger than themselves. So my friend Scott is an example. He's made quite the effort to bring other industries here to Salt Lake City where we live. And he's been behind the Silicon Slopes, and he's taking his own capital and investing in businesses. So for you, you've taken your capital and put it into this summit event, but you're also investing in content and your team. So tell us, where is it that has the majority of your focus in your business right now towards growth?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm, as is necessary, really in the transition of being in the business day-to-day working with clients to being more working on the business and focusing more on the movement and the advisors and still my own team of advisors, if you will, right at about 50-50, I would guess. Of course, you know, there are some times like in the preparation for the summit where I might be skewed a little bit more towards the event. But from an annual perspective, it's right at 50-50. And yet, I'm also very clear that for this movement to really take off, I need to continue to separate myself from the day-to-day client activity and turn more of my client time into a one-to-many environment instead of so much one-to-one environments. And that's true somewhat of my work with advisors as well. And yet, I know that if I can help one advisor, they'll go help 500 clients. So it enables me to come back to that central goal that I have of helping as many people as possible and just getting clear and then developing systems so that that clarity can actually be implemented within our team. And it's taking a shift on the team's part too. We had to bring in another advisor. We had to bring in some additional systems so that that side of the business could operate less with me actually doing the work and more with me as a leader, as a provider of video and audio and books and that kind of thing. Again, back to that one-to-many approach. So I'm very aware that I need to continue to make progress in increasing the time that I'm spending on the movement and decreasing the time that I'm spending one-on-one with clients. And yet, at the same time, I don't ever want it to be 100% movement and 0% clients. It may truly be that case at some point, but I think for the short term, maybe even the medium term, having activities that are still in the trenches keeps me real, keeps me relevant, enables me to help advisors more, helps me really keep my pulse on, or my finger on the pulse, I guess is the way you're supposed to say that, on what clients are thinking and doing and acting and how they're learning, et cetera. So I'm thinking, you know, take that up to maybe 70% advisor slash event slash movement work and 30% client work, and then level off for a while, and then we'll see where the future goes after that.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. You know, as we read that book, and as you're mentioning the in and on, most of our readers or listeners understand this from Michael Gerber, the E-Myth.
Right.
And, you know, you've been in business for a long time. So it's not as though you're still bootstrapping and you have a really successful company. And I think for our listeners, they may be a little bit shocked to see, hey, you know, 50% of my time is in the business, 50% is off. But what you indicated of still being relevant, understanding what's happening. Oftentimes I see with other quote-unquote gurus out there is they do the work to get to an elevated level and then they are just completely devoid and forget of all everything else and they just become irrelevant.
It's definitely a risk, yes, and not something that I want to have happen. And I too have watched other people do that. So I want to make sure that I maintain closeness, not only to the advisors and what they're dealing with, but to the clients and what they're dealing with. And of course, the advisors are dealing with the clients. So all very much interrelated. And it's also work that I love. And so it's going to be easy to maintain whatever the percentage ends up being, some connection to the day-to-day activity so that I continue to be relevant and to be growing within that relevancy.
So Kim, if you had 5 years left of work in you, and by the way, audience, Kim hates the word retirement. I'm not going to use it. And mm-hmm. I'll link to her books so you can understand why. But if you had 5 years left of work, what are the things that you would focus on?
More books, more podcasts, more YouTubes, more environments that are sharing the wisdom and enabling the message to get out there on a repetitive basis, because that's how people learn. That's how our continued movement will expand. And I use the word movement as a verb there in terms of what it's doing. And I love the fact that it can be both a verb and a noun. And then in addition to that, continuing to grow, because that's what, to me, everything should be about. When growth is occurring, then good can happen. And so whatever it takes for that, and not that growing isn't sometimes 2 steps forward and 1 step back, or sometimes 3 steps back, but that growth is what keeps things alive and relevant. And that's a place that I want to be. And I also want to say that I have loved having this bigger than myself aspect to be a part of. I mean, I kind of feel bad for people that have a business and it's just so internally focused and it's just doing its work, and they don't have something bigger to be a part of, because I've really loved having that additional aspect. It's a lot of work, takes a lot of time and money, but it's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Kim, what should I have asked you that I didn't?
That's a great question. Always, I think the biggest lesson to be learned is to get clear on your vision. And that's hard. It takes listening. And so whatever you need to do to build space in your life to listen, whether it's going on walks in nature or disconnecting from your phone and your music for a while, or maybe there's somebody that you can have conversation with to get that time, whether there's a higher power in your life that will help you with that, whatever it is that enables you to listen, because then you're hearing, you're literally hearing, but you're also hearing what you're not hearing. And I think that's what's helped me get clear on that vision and get clear on some of the values that I have for myself. And that makes a big difference.
Well, Kim, thanks for spending some time with us today. For our listeners, you've been able to glean a lot of different insights. This isn't from a business owner that's just been in for a couple of years or running a small business. This is something serious. And if you check out the summit or the Prosperity Economics Movement, which we'll put inside of the show notes, you'll be able to see that this is larger than life. And my guess is, even if Kim wasn't involved this year, it would still continue to get momentum and it would get bigger and bigger. And for you listeners, make sure you go through, check out the resources that we have in the show notes. If you like this episode, please give a shout out to myself and to Kim. And you can also, if you're interested in any of that, you know, becoming your own bank, or if you're having some financial questions and you're not satisfied with the normal Wall Street stuff, you can check out her podcast, which is the Prosperity Podcast. So, Kim, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you, Spencer.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. What would be great is for you to give a shout out to Kim. And particularly if this is something of interest to you, subscribe to her podcast. The link's inside of the show notes. What she is doing is something larger than her life. And it's been a pleasure to not only be a friend, but to also interview her and have her on the show and get her message out to more people. So again, if you like the show, please leave your reviews, follow up with our guests, say thanks for what they're doing, and we'll continue to produce more wonderful content for you.